drive, I might just blow your mind tonight. I'm so hyped, but it's no hype. From this height, it's direct hits on sight. I'm your type, lend me your ears to show you that there's something in me. I'm not giving up, I'm standing right here, holding these days hostage, and I'll make this my year. We turning fear into love, and the love's in the air. I love doing this, cause nothing compares, nothing can share that same type of feeling when you feeling them flares. They can't catch it, it's havoc. I rip to a tear, switch the scenario, my stereos, I leave them impaired. Variables start to change, and they're all in my range. I just gotta grab it, it's all mathematics. Every step is drastic, I make it fantastic. I'm trying to take your breath away, asthmatic.
This is live through the stereo. Go and let it blow, blow through the stereo. I'ma let them know, no through the stereo. Yo, here we go, go through the stereo, stereo. This is live through the stereo. Go and let it blow, blow through the stereo. I'ma let them know, no through the stereo. Yo, here we go through the stereo, stereo.
Yeah, just nod your head with it. So explicit and vivid. Every image is intricate, intimate. I put my all into it. No scrimmage and no rules. I'm a pro tool. Hear my heartbeat beat into the vocals. I'm so loco, lost my mind, oh no. It's ponderoso, dope so. No overdose, cause it's dope, yo. Man, this is house grown, mixed with some milestones. So I let the style flow down like the Dow Jones. Bringing it with some foul tones, letting the crowd know. We getting loud, so it's eardrum rudiments. Yeah, we bring it rude again. Move, little hooligan. Music for tuning in, full time to the 10. I'm on my clock, like I told you. I'm doing this for dreams we pursue.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the Anti Media Radio Show. Once again, with your host, Nick Burnaby, here on UCBI.TV. Thank you all for tuning in. I'm really happy to be back with you. If you can't tell from the tone of my voice, I had a really long weekend, which I'm still attempting to recover from, but I'll talk a little bit about that. And we got a lot of news to go over. We're going to be joined by a couple special guests tonight for the first half of the show, and then all kinds of news going on around the world. So many things happening. Election stuff, I mean, you name it, there's going to be a lot of things. Our introduction meme, we're going to get into all that stuff. This weekend I went over to the Electric Daisy Carnival, also known as EDC, as many people may know it by. It's a huge, huge rave, the biggest one in North America, second biggest in the world. But they invited me out there to cover it for the anti-media, so that's what I did. And I'm going to be writing a story about it tomorrow, but some very encouraging developments from this rave. I'm sure many of our listeners have been to raves before, and you know, it's a big music festival, dancing and all that stuff, drugs, and, you know, we did a little bit of all that just to get, you know, to get the full experience. What I'm going to be writing about, actually, though, is how there was hundreds of thousands of people there from all kinds of different backgrounds and all just very, very diverse crowd. Nobody was fighting. Nobody was killing each other. Nobody was arguing. Everybody was getting along peacefully. And as kind of minor as that may seem, it really is encouraging in this time, in these times that we're living in right now, where this whole damn world, it seems, is just completely divided, not only by politics, ideology, language, borders, and, you know, you name it. I mean, everybody's divided like never before today. Over in England, in the UK, they're voting on this huge Brexit vote tomorrow. Well, I guess the voting already started because it's already tomorrow over there. But, you know, England is completely divided, 50-50. The United States is divided, gun control, you know, Trump, fascism. I mean, you name it, dude. The whole place is just, like, falling apart, kind of. But this rave kind of restored my hope a little bit. Because, like I said, there was a bunch of people there all agreeing on something and being cool with each other. Something you don't see very often anymore. And so, you know, that's kind of what I learned. I'll be talking about it more in depth tomorrow. Anyway.
Is it true there was a huge after party at Trump Towers?
I heard one of my friends I was staying with, one of our team members actually poured a cup of piss on the Trump Tower. I can't confirm that to be true or not, but, you know, we'll just leave it at that. Anyway, that being said, let me introduce our panel tonight. We've got my longtime co-host on the line, DB Schwartz. What's up, DB?
Hey, not much. Just watching in vapid horror at the sit-in. I don't think people understand what it really would mean if the decision to own guns was turned over to a private corporation like the DHS.
Yeah, man, that's what our intro meme was about, too. And so we're going to be talking about that. I think we're going to push the news section over to the second half of the show, though. But we're definitely going to get into that. We've also got our awesome journalist on the line, Jake Anderson. What's up, Jake? Jake, I think your microphone is muted. We've also got Manny Aguilar on the line. What's up, Manny?
What's up there, Jake? DD, Jake. Basically keeping tabs on some things, you know. The Border Patrol just got a new director. Came from the FBI. So hopefully we can put the hammer down on these Border Patrol. They're shooting people left and right and stuff like that. So we've been keeping up with that and a lot of other stuff and all that. And just let me know why you need to talk about Oaxaca, okay?
For sure, man. Yeah, we're going to talk a lot about that later on in the show.
Nick, can you hear me now?
Yeah, we got you now. What's up, Jake?
I was just saying it's weird because I poured a glass of piss on a building this weekend, too.
Really? But,
that wasn't any kind of like political statement. I was just bored, you know?
The Viper Room hated that.
My grandmother was furious. To react to what DB was saying, it's interesting coming at it from my perspective because I used to be kind of like a blue dog Democrat, pro gun control liberal, and it's just so weird viewing all of this from it's like I'm in an alternate universe because there really was a time when I would have been pro gun control. I guess before I started to see how I don't really know what turned me actually, but I just see it as these as very minor tweaks to existing legislation that's only going to strip rights from us now, and I don't know. It's I really don't know that banning assault weapons to a select number of people would save lives. I don't know. That's a tough argument to make.
Yeah, and one of the big problems with this argument that these guys are having is that nobody really gets to know who's on that list. I mean, it's anybody can get put on there. And as one of the congressmen that was kind of dissenting today against that sit-in pointed out, it's one of those things where it's like they kind of throw you on that list. You find out about it later on when one of your freedoms gets kind of revoked because you're on this list, and then you have to go and petition to get off of the list. And I know a person who is wound up on that list, and it's not a fun situation to be in. And one of the guys was saying, it's like, what other of your amendments do we have where it's like, oh, freedom of speech or anything like that, where it's like we take away your privilege or freedom of speech, and then you have to petition us to get it back. It's like there's no other situation where that happens. So just another bad idea. And these guys choose to do a sit-in over this thing, and of course it's getting support because of the whole Orlando shooting, and everybody's up in arms over that. And we all know what happens after terrorist attacks. People get kind of riled up, and they support stupid things, and this is one of them. And this is one of those moments we're going to look back later on, and if anything comes of this, we're going to look back just like we do now on 9/11 and say, well, that's what gave us the Patriot Act. It's going to be the Orlando shooting that gave us whatever it is these guys are trying to pull off right now. So
what it could do, and a lot of people don't get, is that if they allow it to be, anybody on these lists, it can be any veteran too.
Yeah, a lot of veterans can wind up on this list pretty easily. A lot of them have the training and stuff like that to use guns, and that's also a dangerous thing to the government, I guess you could say.
Well, who's to say they won't put entire groups on the list? Like in the future, if cyber terrorism becomes a big deal, then you start lumping in WikiLeaks style media hacks in that. You can end up having entire chunks of extremist groups stripped of the right to own a weapon because of just some arbitrary law. I just think it's really dangerous. And if I were convinced that it would actually save a significant number of lives, I guess I would support it. But I'd much rather them do a sit-in on disarming our military-industrial complex from going and having pointless wars. I think that'd be much more, like, they should have to give up something too. They should have to give up one of the wars.
Yeah, something. I mean, and again, it's handing over more authority to the government. At the same time, we're talking about Trump running and being literally the next Hitler, according to some liberal opinions. And they want to give this power over to Trump? Like, seriously? I'm not sure that's a good idea. So yeah, there's that too. Just more stuff to think about. I think we may be joined by one of our guests from the 917 area code. Let's see.
That would be me, Antonio.
Antonio, how you doing tonight?
How are you? Pretty good.
I'm pretty good as well. So Antonio is joining us. He's part of a initiative called Green 360, also known as Green Circle, correct?
Correct.
So you've got this project going on where you're really trying to build some momentum towards the green movement and like sustainability, I guess you could say. Just empowering people that are movers and shakers, like in the green sustainability movement, you know, entrepreneurs and organizations and things like that.
Right.
So, Antonio, can you tell us a little bit more about what you guys have going on over there?
Well, I'm a film producer, film television producer is where I started, but I came from the energy business. I was an energy consultant for Con Edison for many years, and I kind of fell into the entertainment business and met a lot of people, and I met a gentleman who was a business consultant. We became good friends, and he showed me how to bring one to the other. So at that point in time, I already met big people in Hollywood. I had a mentor. His name is Ted Kotcheff, and he was the executive producer and the showrunner to NBC show Law & Order Special Victims Unit. And then I got in tune and worked with him for a while. And I just saw a lot of things that I, when I was on the set, that I didn't agree on. You know, and a lot of it, you know, and I'm not just talking about special victims, you know, I'm talking about all over the place in filmmaking. And I just thought there was a good idea that I bring the energy business into the entertainment business. So now what I do is I do a nationwide talk on being sustainable in the entertainment business all over the place. I'm on an advisory board for the Green Festival Expo, which goes all over the United States. And I speak for them, and I get invited a lot to a lot of universities, like Syracuse University, because what they want to do is they want to teach their students when they graduate from college and have this embedded in their heads about being sustainable, not just in energy, but in everything that they do in life, the food they eat, you know, cleaning the air, you know, and it's a hard task. So it's not easy because you want people to listen, and that's the hardest thing you could do is get people to listen. You know,
yeah, that's one of the tough things is you know, people have like a set of beliefs they already have, and to kind of challenge those beliefs or challenge their way of thinking. It's always kind of an uphill battle, you know, but having good information to give out is always, you know, always a good way to kind of get their minds thinking a little bit.
Sure, but this all, you know, like I grew up in, you know, Con Edison, you know, and a long time ago, it was basically, you know, all they wanted to do is not build any more power plants. And then after Al Gore's movie, you know, everything just went into global warming and everybody decided to create this beautiful word called sustainable, you know, which means overall everything, you know. And, you know, like Leonardo DiCaprio goes over the world talking about clean energy and climate change. But if he's caught in a restaurant eating a steak, everybody goes hard on him. Like, hey, I thought you were sustainable, you know, and you know, everybody could be sustainable, but in different categories, you know. And if I eat a steak, people look at me and say, hey, why are you eating meat? And I say, well, I only eat meat once every 2 months. You know, I don't eat meat. I don't make it a habit of doing so. And I am very sustainable, and I'm trying to pass it on to many people. You know, but unfortunately, because I'm in the film industry, because like Leonardo DiCaprio is, when he jumps on a jet plane, a private jet, and he flies from the Cannes Film Festival to New York to accept an environmental award, Robert De Niro, and then flies back to the Cannes Film Festival the same night, people look at him and say, hey, what did you do that for? You know, and they go pretty hard on him, you know, and they forget all the good things that he did, you know, and, you know, all the money that he raises and all the startup companies that he's doing, you know, and he really believes in what, you know, in saving the world, and so do I. And that's why when I met Austin, Cassio, you know, from Red Giant Union, he does farming, completely different from what I do. But what attracted me to him was the fact that his passion, his heart, you know, was just totally in it. And it's something that I'm not 100% sure of, but he made it seem easy. So I said to myself, you know what, I'm going to combine forces with him and see if we could spread a beautiful message around the world, because this is not a United States of America thing. This is a global effort. And if we don't unite, we're not gonna do it. It's not gonna happen. And that's the key here. You know, I mean, Germany and you know, a lot of Europe are way ahead of us in everything. You know, the United States, I mean, New York now is booming on clean energy and solar energy now. You know, there's a lot of programs that have started, and I'm happy about it. But the film industry is still, you know, taking its time trying to catch up. And that's why I come in. I'm trying to change that. Because let's face it, film and television, if we could get an audience to believe that we are sustainable, it'll send a message not just to the United States, all over the world. Because, I mean, what more broadcast do you need, right? Film, and when people find out that film is done sustainable 100%, the audience will love it. And I think it's going to send a positive message all over the world.
Yeah, that's a great point. You know, the American media really gets projected all over the place. I mean, from Mexico to Europe to Asia. I mean, people in theaters all around the world watch American-made movies and things like that. So I think that's a great idea. When I was talking to Austin, he was telling me about part of your guys's organization is to help entrepreneurs, like green entrepreneurs, get, you know, their footing and stuff like that. And that to me seemed like a really great idea, because, you know, one of the things is that if we get these, you know, green policies here in the United States, that there's still that issue where they're going to start, you know, pushing more business to China, where they're still producing cheap energy with coal and stuff like that. And I know that there's been a lot of new developments making energy, sustainable energy, much, much cheaper, and to the point now where it's really starting to compete with fossil fuel energy and stuff. Can you tell us a little bit about some of like the entrepreneurial stuff going on, maybe some of like the innovative ideas that you see going on to like really make sustainable energy more competitive?
Well, I think that there's, like, in the entertainment business, there are, like, EMA, you know, the Environmental Media Association, which deals with television and film and media itself, and they combine forces with all the film companies. And what they're trying to do is basically use actors to send a message all over the world, you know, because, let's say, for instance, Leonardo DiCaprio, people that are fans of his, You know, and they think if he spreads a message, or Robert Redford does, that people would say, hey, let me go sustainable. And it brings companies, like people that invest in Leonardo DiCaprio's foundation, $40 million. Those aren't just Hollywood people. Those are companies that are investing. They're investing in him because he's a spokesperson. He goes to UN, he speaks, and he brings on people to unite. And that's basically what I want to do. I want to, you see, I want to combine not just people in the movie business. I want to combine people in business, people in education and schools, just regular farmers to learn, you know. And I want to use basically the film industry to do it. And I think it's very important because, like I said before, it's a global effort. I got this whole idea from a gentleman who does Tropfest, which is it started with like 100 people in Australia in a cafe, and he blew up and went global. And all he does is show short films, 8 minutes long, and he's helped so many directors and actors and screenwriters become famous because of it. Now he screens it globally online, and his name is John Paulson, and he's the co-producer of Elementary on CBS, that show. And I took that idea and I threw a twist in it, and I said, well, let me call it Planet Green Fest and do the same thing, but where the film has to be done using green technologies, sustainable from the production side all the way to when you're filming, 100%. And because that will send a message. And then you're going to get branding in these festivals, and it's going to send somewhat a global effort to spread a message all over the world. I'm always pushing for stars to use, you know, like hybrid cars on the set during filming. Unless it's a period film in the 1950s, and, you know, in those days there was no, you know, of course, electric cars, you know, but like stuff like that. So Austin, with his farming, I think he could bring a lot of those people to this company because I think they need to learn. It's all about learning and opening up this new technology, because certain people are clueless. They have no idea. Yeah, you know, like I heard in, you know, I went to L.A. and I walked into a hotel, the Marriott, the JW Marriott. I saw signs in the bathroom saying, take 5 minute showers. Like, stuff like that is not all over. It's not global. New York doesn't have it. They don't have signs. They, you know, and I think it should be alerted that people know that. And, like, little things like that make a big difference, you know. And I deal with more technology. You know, a lot of people come in on the film set and they look at the paper recycling and stuff like that, waste. I look into, like, the construction of the set. You know, what are they using? You know, the paint that they're using. I look at the lighting, because a lot of people, the DPs today, don't want to change. They think that if you change to the energy efficient lighting, that's going to change the outlook of the picture. You have to use your common sense, and this is where your physics come in. The combination of two lights, you know, to come across some kind of color. And they used to old school. You know, so that's why Syracuse likes to teach the new directors, the future journalists, and the future students of today to take that with them when they go into the workforce. And, well, that's important, you know, and drive hybrid, you know, alternate fuel vehicles, turn off the lights when leaving a room, walk, ride bikes for errands, for school, parties, and so on, you know, buy food in bulk. You know, the simple little things, common sense. You know,
yeah, and like you, you said,
get a scooter, for God's sake.
A lot of people, you know, a lot of people don't realize a lot of these things when it comes to sustainability and stuff. And one of the things that you mentioned was like some guy eating a steak, because we've talked a lot about this in the past, but and you've mentioned farming. People think that the you know, the pollution and all the greenhouse gases and stuff comes from like people driving cars, and you know, that's partially true, but farming is actually a huge contributor to greenhouse gases, including the meat industry and, you know, just regular farming, you know, when they're monocropping, and then down in Brazil where they're like clearing out rainforest to do this kind of farming and stuff. That's one side of this debate that many people don't know about. I don't know if you've seen the documentary, what's it called? Cowspiracy. That's a really good that I saw that was really convincing. But yeah, I think it's huge that you're out there educating people, because that's really where we need to do a lot of work, so that people actually know what they're doing. Because I think a lot of people just use, you know, they eat a bunch of meat, they use a bunch of plastics, they do a lot of things that they don't realize are actually contributing to the problem. But if they knew about it, they'd be maybe a little more conscious about it.
Yeah, but that's the whole thing. And that's but you know what, I'm a believer of, you know, I love the action of words, I really do, but I also like the actions of doing, actually doing it. And you hear all these speeches, and I get tired of it, to be honest. I go around doing all these speeches, and then what happens is people do not follow it. They don't do it. And that to me, it's a struggle. There's only so much, you know, Leonardo DiCaprio goes around the world, and Matt Damon, who also deals with, I think, what is it, water.org, and he's a believer of, you know, trying to get the water to the poor people instead of them dragging out with these you know, these barrels, you know, and walking 20 miles to get water and bring it back, you know, bring water to them, you know, and stuff like that. If there was a way that we could all combine and make easier for people, because, you know, I mean, there was a water shortage in L.A. and California, and I'm thinking all the celebrities are out there talking about being sustainable and clean air, and they're forgetting their hometown, their own state, and yet you see people still watering the plants constantly, watering the sidewalk, you know, and not following the rules. Why is that? It doesn't make sense to me, you know. And the one thing I get pissed off in New York City is when somebody's complaining about the rats in the subway train, in the subway tracks, but yet you see somebody throwing garbage into the tracks when the garbage can is right there, you know. Like, I see this stuff, and nobody does anything about it. The cops don't issue them a ticket, which they should. It's against the law to do that, but they don't bother. And I think they should be strict on those rules, because you get tired. I mean, I'm seeing people throw things on the floor when the garbage is right there. And I just feel like I'm wasting my time sometimes, but I'm so passionate in what I like to do, and I believe so much in it that I just keep going. But I just want people just do it. Just do it. You know, Austin's that type of kid. He's doing it. He's been doing it since he was 18 years old, and he's constantly pushing. And for the past 6 months, I've been watching this kid, you know, on Facebook and on his live shows, and I was very intrigued, because I think he's done more about being sustainable than myself or anybody that I know, more than Robert Redford or Leonardo DiCaprio, I'll be honest with you. You know, and that is a plus. And I first got the idea because I wanted to create a company called 50 States of Green, where I was trying to get all the governors and mayors together, all 50 states together in one room, to talk about policy, the energy policy. But we all know that's going to be impossible to do if there was, like, strict rules that people follow, you know, in all the states, instead of, you know, everybody's like bouncing left and right, you know, not knowing what to do. One state has this, they follow, the other state has different policies. It doesn't make sense, you know, and I think it should be all one strict. So I think getting everyone together, you know, in Green 360 in the world, I'm not just talking United States, the world, different companies from all over the world to unite, I think it would be strong, very strong. And that's what I want to do. I want to just change the world and hope that I do that, if I can do that.
That's an awesome goal, and we kind of on the same kind of track here at the Anti-Media. I mean, we got our radio show, but we've also got our website and stuff, and we're out to change the world as well. And I feel the frustration too, man. I mean, we put out a bunch of information, and you know, sometimes it feels like people aren't listening, but other times, you know, there's rays of hope out there here and there that, you know, are definitely encouraging at times and things like that. But I think you're doing a lot of great work. I had a question for you regarding any pushback that you've had, because, you know, everyone talked about big oil, and we all know that it's a huge lobby, huge amounts of money in the industry and stuff. And not only are you kind of high up there in this sustainable energy movement, but, you know, also you've had your experience at in the old energy establishment and stuff like that. Can you tell us a little bit if there's any like pushback that you see from big oil regarding your movement, or just any general information that you can give us regarding the oil lobby that you've, you know, come to know throughout?
Sure. Sure. Well, you got to understand that oil is huge. It's a lot of money economic wise. So like I tell everybody, green technologies is now in the picture, you know, wind power, solar energy, and so on. But the problem is with oil, it's not going to go away just like that. It gradually will, slowly, because they need to make money. And it's all about money. It's all about economics. If you take the oil industry right out of the picture, like tomorrow, you're going to see a dip in the economics of the United States. You know, and that's not good. So it's like anything. It's like when Easy Pass first came out here in New York, right? They gradually, you know, they started with a few, and then because what are you going to do with those people? People are not trained, you know, for computers and so on, and you have to actually send them back to school and train the company themselves so they could catch up to technology. A lot of people in the oil industry, you know, like I'm not a fan of drilling in the ocean. I'm not, because I know for a fact that a lot of the tsunamis can be caused by drilling in the ocean, earthquakes. You know, if that is caused deep underneath the ocean floor, it could cause a tsunami. It could, you know, be responsible for many issues that happened in the past, many disasters. You know, you don't hear it on the news. You're never going to hear it because it's most likely detected. But that's why you have Greenpeace always going out there and you know, waving a flag and starting, you know, they're very big on the activists. Robert Redford hates oil companies. He dislikes them. And sure, I get people all the time. I have a good friend of mine who makes his money buying companies, oil companies, and then he sells them, and he makes money out of it. You know, and I fight with him all the time about it. I say, how can you be doing that? I mean, I'm doing one, you know, I'm a good friend of his. I'm trying to do one thing, and you're doing the complete opposite of what I'm trying to do. You know, and he says, well, Antonio, you know, I have to make money. You know, the money's in oil, and it's always, it's a process, and eventually you'll most likely get what you want. But oil's is not going to go away pretty soon, you know, like tomorrow. It's not. It's all process, but eventually it will, because we're all combining forces. I mean, if you go to the Green Festival, I was amazed when I first went and I spoke there a couple of years ago. I was just blown away because I was the only one in the entertainment business talking. Everybody else that's there, they're brand people. You know, you have linen, you know, from hotels, you know, different products, foods, you know, that people eat, clothing. I was just constantly blown away on different things that different companies and these business people that are uniting to make a difference in these little products that could help in kitchen and the energy business and set design and construction all over the world in different buildings. It's just in travel and transportation and so on, you know, with the hybrid and the electric cars, and that's the future, you know. But technology, it's going to take some time, you know, because the economics of it, You know, you don't want a downfall. It could hurt us, too. But eventually you're going to see coal get away, because let's say when you take coal away, all those people that work there, all those families, they're going to lose their jobs. So you need to figure out a way to find those people other things to do or train them. Like Bill Clinton said a long time ago, the unemployment rate, you know, a lot of these people, there's a lot of jobs for them, but a lot of these people aren't trained to do those jobs. You know, and that's a problem, a big problem, you know, and that's what I believe.
Yeah, that's, you know, one of the big problems is that, you know, it's an economic struggle too, but I've seen a lot of recent developments that are pretty encouraging regarding, you know, the cost of sustainable energy and stuff like that. And so I feel like, you know, as you reach kind of the break-even point when it comes to the cost of fossil fuel energy and clean energy, you know, you're going to see a big kind of shift over to the green stuff, because obviously, you know, it's better to not pollute the planet when you're creating energy, you know.
Right.
I think we'll see a shift coming pretty soon here, sooner rather than later, hopefully, because, you know, well, everybody's, you know, we're all kind of tied in. It's not, like you said, it's not just an American problem. It's not just a European problem or a Chinese problem. I mean, the pollution that we're putting out there right now, it's affecting the entire world, the whole ecosystem, everything.
Yeah, well, I'm being honest with you, and I'm pretty sure you know this. If we don't do something, if we don't all unite, I mean, the United States can only do a certain portion, and all the other countries too. But if we don't bind, like that whole Paris talk was very important, but here's the thing. Every year they have that talk. You know, and it gets better every time, but it has to be a global effort, because if not, our world is in trouble, a big trouble, and you know, even Stephen Hawking says it, you know, and he says that we need to change things. We need all change. If not, I mean, there's only one in me, but I'm pretty sure there's a lot of other people that feel the same way that I do, and that's why you hear Leonardo DiCaprio. You know, he does a lot of good stuff, but there's also a lot of stuff that he's not paying attention to, and I think that's why the media goes hard on him. And but you know what? Overall, the advantage and the pro is effective, because he's bonding people together, and that's what we should all be doing. You know, and eventually, green technology will take over. The oil companies will want to make a piece of that action, and they have to figure out how to do it. I mean, Con Edison, for instance, they're into energy conservation. They've been doing it since day one. That's the key word, energy conservation. That's where it all started. You know, but people are using the word being sustainable because it's not just energy. You know, it's overall everything. It's the way of life. It's the human right. You know, yourself. Like, why are people still smoking? You know? I mean, I'm going to tell you something. My mother passed away on May 26th, but before that, this woman had breast cancer, skin cancer, and lung cancer. She never smoked in her life, and she had lung cancer. So what caused her to have lung cancer? And then she was cured, thank God, at that time, but that's the air we're breathing, the food that we're eating, that's causing that. So we need to change that. And I think that's where Austin comes in and what he's trying to do, trying to grow things sustainable and trying to teach people that, you know, in farming. And I agree with your point about the fertilizer and a lot of stuff that they're using, that it's creating havoc, you know, in the world, that we're breathing this stuff and it's killing us. The whole 9/11, all those people down there that were there, a lot of them are sick. I know that for a fact. I have two cousins that were there and they're sick. You know, how do you explain that? You know, it's horrible. You know, and you got to change that. We got to change that.
Exactly.
So people like you in the radio, you know, interviewing people and letting everybody know
is a big thing.
Thanks, man. Yeah, you know, we're trying, and you're right. It is like our whole lifestyle, from the clothes you're wearing to the bottle of water you buy at the store, to the gas you're putting in your car, to the food that you put on your table. It's all for the most part. It's all done in an unsustainable way, you know. Except for, you know, there's some people that are kind of really going out of their way to try to go sustainable with, you know, more efficient cars and, you know, sustainably grown cotton and, you know, alternatives to plastic or not using plastic at all. But, you know, it's still a struggle, and I think that's why it's so important to help uplift entrepreneurs that are going to help give us a way of life where it's not as hard, or you don't have to go out of your way to be sustainable. It's just kind of it just happens, you know. And I think that's what's so important about getting the business community involved in the sustainability movement. Antonio, we're gonna have to move on here and get into some news stories, because we've had a really busy week of things going on, and I missed my show on Monday. But can you let our listeners know where they can find out about your movement, how they can get a hold of you guys, and, you know, how they can join in?
Well, you could go to, you know, Austin, which is redgiantunion.org. You could go to my website, which is green360.org, or you could go to planetgreenfest.org. And you'll see me, and believe me, you can Google my name. I'm all over the place in the media. So, Antonio Sayan, you can find me. Trust me.
There. Awesome.
So, okay, and thank you, Nick, and appreciate it from everyone, and hope you spread that message around.
Awesome.
Sustainable.
Yeah, definitely. We'll do. That was Antonio Sayan, everybody, from Green Circle or green360.org, and doing some really good work, because sustainability, I mean, protecting this planet, it's really the biggest issue that nobody really wants to talk about, because there's so many huge interests involved in maintaining the status quo. I mean, like we talked about a little bit about the oil establishment. There's the beef industry. If you guys have watched Cowspiracy, you'll know all about that. Definitely recommend that documentary. Huge, powerful lobby and industry out there, and the farming and the pesticides, all this stuff that we use every day. It just contributes to our own downfall, or our own poisoning, or, you know, whatever. I mean, so many different ways we're killing ourselves with this crap.
You know what our reliance on this big corporate food structure does is it creates a weapon out of food, because if ever there's a problem and they can't fix it in time, they can use it as a way to, you know, incite basically like food riots, because we're all so dependent now on other people growing our food for us. I mean, it's as simple as that. And then energy, they control it, so they control us.
Yeah, exactly. Great point, man. If they ever accidentally, or, you know, if the huge power outage. Remember that one here in Southern California where, you know, almost all of Southern California lost power for a day. I mean, people were losing their shit.
And it's funny, because that happens regularly up here during storms. So nobody loses their shit, because everyone has generators.
Yeah. And so that's why it's important to get on board with this sustainability movement, and not just in your typical way. I mean, it's really important for people to try to create their own energy and grow their own food. That way we're not, you know, kind of slaves to the system where they can just cut the food, or, you know, give you crappy food and you got no choice but to just deal with it. Or, you know, jack up the prices on your electricity, and then what? You know, what are you going to do? So that's why it's important to get your own going, or get some kind of community oriented energy production going, or food production going.
And there's got to be a pushback against some of this legislation. Like, I read that Nevada just actually instituted a 40% penalty against people who had solar panels.
I heard about that. That just came out a couple last week, huh? Yeah.
It's can you imagine that, though, getting your rates jacked up 40%?
Yeah. Crazy. So we're going to shift quickly into the news. We got a lot of ground to cover. First, I want to go over to Manny, because Mexico is going off right now. People getting gunned down in the street by the government. It's a complicated issue, but mass protests. And now they're spreading. They started in Oaxaca, and now they're starting to spread all over the place. So I want to bring Manny on. Manny, you still there?
Got here.
Hey, man, make sure you speak up a little. Your mic's a little bit down over there. Can you give us a quick rundown about what's going on in Mexico? Because everybody, it's finally getting some news coverage and stuff. I think people are starting to find out about it. What's actually going on down there?
Well, I've got people down there. They're activists from my home state of Guerrero. They're down there actually in Oaxaca as we speak. They basically have reported that they have a lot of the Zapatistas that have come over from Chiapas to really support the movement. One of the sad things that's happening, a couple of teachers have been killed, you know, and a couple of people that have supported teachers have been killed. Blood all over the place. They created a lot of fires and stuff because they're just going after the government big time and stuff like that. One of the things that I'm really not happy about, you know, that these guys are cowards. Instead of having the cops on the ground throwing the smoke bombs at the protesters, now the federal cops are basically dropping the bombs from the helicopter. And they keep on, and my friend, has been saying that they drop, Isidro said they keep on going up and down, and just throwing to have them disperse with all these smoke bombs from the air. And so it's just really, really terrible what's going on down there. The big positive thing is that the Zapatistas are joining the cause, and they're also going to be joined by 200,000 doctors because they feel like they need to support the cause, is what's happening with the teachers and stuff like that. So that's what's basically going on in Oaxaca. They have a lot of cops down there, federal and state, clashing with the protesters and stuff. And it's just, but down there, one of the things is they're knocking the cops out too, you know. They're going after the cops. They're fighting the cops. So they're not backing off and stuff. And it's just, it's just chaos right now as far as the city is safe in the state of Oaxaca. It's chaos big time and all that, I just want to say I'm glad you're okay, Nick, too, because I've been hearing about the fires down there in your ways and stuff like that. So, I'm glad you're okay. So that's the report from Bob.
Well, luckily, I'm close enough to the ocean where the fires don't really come this far west. If they do, I'm in big trouble because you can only go, I guess I'll have to swim out into the bay to avoid them. Manny, what are these protests? I know they started over something going on with the education system, but I know that it's now spreading. I guess it's mostly just widespread dissatisfaction with the state of affairs in Mexico that's really underlying these protests. But I know it. What was the main thing that caused these protests to kick off?
The main cause of the protest is because the government is trying to privatize everything and stuff. And these young students, they can't afford books and they can't afford tuition. So like that, they can't even afford to go to school, even if the government puts it out there. And one of the big things that just exploded is that they're putting schools in the good parts of Mexico, but they're not putting schools in the rural areas and stuff like that. And it's almost like they're doing it on purpose and keeping the indigenous, I don't like this word, but they're trying to keep us as stupid as possible, and that's the message that has exploded. That they believe that education should be for everybody across the board without a doubt, and free education, not where they have to be charged for books and charged to even go to school, So that's the main reason.
Yeah, now the doctors are getting involved and stuff, so this is really spreading across various sectors of the economy, and this is turning into a big-time strike, too, which can really bring the economy to a slowdown. We've been talking about this on the show for a while, that Mexico is really primed for the next revolution. They've already been through, I think, two revolutions in Mexico, and now they're primed up for a third. And being that Mexico is just to the south of us, I think people should really be paying attention about what's going on down there. And one thing I wanted to bring up is the fact that if you look, Manny, you mentioned the helicopters dropping smoke bombs and like actually fire bombs from the helicopters. I looked and I saw the video and I saw the helicopter, and you know what I saw there? It's an American helicopter that we gave them. And that's one of the issues I wanted to bring up, man. You see all the equipment being moved in the streets. I just saw another video today. They're moving artillery down into Oaxaca now. I mean, they're getting ready to start bombing people within, the Mexican government is getting ready to start bombing its own people. I'm not even playing here. And I saw a video, and it was like an artillery movement, and it's American trucks, American-made artillery, Humvees. I mean, soldiers armed with M16s. I mean, all of this gear that they're using now. And, you know, the Mexican government is notoriously corrupt. It's been notoriously corrupt since the drug war began and probably even before that. And the U.S. has no problem arming them with billions of dollars in military aid. And a lot of it, it's not like the Mexican government's buying it from us. We're giving it to them. The U.S. taxpayer is financing it. And we're giving them a bunch of weaponry that they're now turning around and using it to kill their own people. That, to me, is just unacceptable. It's crazy.
And all that equipment, just for your information and everybody who's listening, all that equipment has been going across the border through the state of Arizona. And, you know, and it's just, but the equipment is going up down there to fight the war on drugs. I mean, great, you know. They're doing a great job, you know.
That's the excuse. It's like, oh, yeah, we're going to give them $3 billion every year to fight the war on drugs. And part of that $3 billion is a huge chunk of military equipment. And unfortunately, that money is not being used the way that we're, at least in theory, supposedly thinking it's going to be used. It's being used now to just gun down their own people. So huge, huge problem over there with that. Oh, man, so much news going on. Let's go back to this introductionary meme. Gun control. I mean, these Congress people, what do they really think they're doing us a service up there, making fools out of themselves, sitting down in the halls of Congress trying to remove our rights? I mean, they finally get passionate about something and it's to like reduce your freedom. It's like, oh, okay. So, I mean, let's get back to that. DB, you got any more thoughts on this?
Well, I mean, I don't know if people research or anything, but the TSA apparently is kind of quasi-governmental, but the DHS is actually a completely private functionary. I mean, it doesn't answer to anything or anybody. And if they're going to be the people that are instituting these no-fly zones and these potential terrorist lists, they're going to pick and choose anyone and everyone who could be a threat and take away their ability to legally own and then, you know, potentially lock them up if they catch them with anything on their property. I mean, it's basically been done before in a pretext motion to disarm potential dissidents. And then it's ironic because every time there's been a mass disarmament of a population in the past, the people that pushed for that disarmament, if it was pushed at all and not pushed on them, ironically enough, are the first wave that usually gets it because they are easily swayed and they're kind of useless to the people in power.
Yeah, dude. And as I was mentioning at the beginning of the show, the whole Trump factor, it's like, if Trump's president, who's to say that he just says, well, no Muslim can own a gun now, you know, and just says it's because, you know, if you're a certain religion, you can no longer own a weapon.
No veteran because you're trained.
Yeah. Well, Trump loves the veterans, right, supposedly, except he forgot to donate a lot of that money that he raised for them to any veterans organizations. But, you know, this is not something to take lightly. And, you know, just talking about Mexico, you know, Mexico has been disarmed. It's illegal to own a firearm in Mexico unless you – I think the only loophole is that if you're like a veteran of the military, you're allowed to own a weapon in Mexico. I think that's like the only loophole, or if you work for the government. And you look at what's going on there, man. They're gunning people down, dude, in the street because they can't shoot back. They're getting gunned down. They're throwing it back rocks. You know what I mean? So this is not a situation we want to be in. And, you know, it's really sad that people get gunned down in the United States, mass shootings and terrorists. A lot of that stuff could be prevented with common sense thinking, not by just taking away guns. I mean, I think a lot of people are beat with baseball bats and die from that. We're not banning baseball bats. I mean, England has banned guns and, you know, their violence didn't go away. So now they're trying to, like, ban knives, dude. Like, you can't even walk around with a steak knife in England without getting in trouble at this point.
And the use of Australia as a parallel is so misguided because around the same time that they so-called banned guns, they also instituted one of the strongest social safety nets as law. So they have a ridiculously high minimum wage, and even though a lot of people can't find work at all, they still have this dole of like $1,400 a month plus their stipend for living. I mean, the thing is, think about it, man. Even when people go crazy, a lot of the time it's economically driven.
Yeah, it is. A lot of the violence in the United States, like, for instance, Chicago, which is like the most violent city in the country, a bunch of gang violence, drug war violence and stuff. The underlying factor there is economics, man. Poverty. People are stealing from each other and people get shot and they rob and, you know, all that kind of stuff. It is. It's an economic thing in many ways. The other thing here in the United States that people don't like talking about is that, you know, we're a violent empire, dude, and our, we have to kind of encode violence into the minds of all these kids, and from the time they're in school, from the time they first watch TV, you know, they're kind of programmed into believing that violence is how we solve issues in the United States, because, I mean, I guess, you know, it's pretty accurate. That's what we do. We bomb countries and we violently arrest people and do things like that. We ban things, which is a form of violence. We're a very violent society, so when people take their rage out through gun violence, it's not exactly a surprising thing. The other factor here, and we just still don't know the exact motive about this Orlando shooter, but we know from his 911 call that he said he was doing it because we're bombing Afghanistan. That's the other factor, is that if we're going to talk about reducing, you know, stopping terrorism and stuff like that, we got to stop bombing all these countries around the world, because every time you bomb a country like Afghanistan, you're going to make some Afghani dude really mad. Or you bomb Pakistan and a Pakistani guy is going to be mad. You overthrow the government of Libya and a bunch of Libyan people are going to be mad. And Syria and so on and so on and so on. You know, if we're going to really talk about and Jake, you made a great point on this. I mean, these guys want to take away our guns. How about they start taking away some of these wars? Because that's really what's driving terrorism. It's not the guns causing terrorism. It's our foreign policy in many instances. You know, and so these guys are not taking this issue seriously. These assholes in Congress up there sitting in right now to take away part of your Second Amendment rights and to give more power to this terrorist watch list, which is completely unconstitutional and is completely arbitrary. They're not serious about stopping terrorism. In fact, judging by their policies and all the wars that they've allowed Obama to get away with, you'd think that they want terrorism, that they're supporting terrorism, and that they're helping cause terrorism. Are they that stupid that they don't know what they're doing is what's causing it, or are they just playing dumb and just allowing their policies to create more terrorism because it allows our government to create perpetual wars? I mean, you tell me. Jake, what do you think of this, dude?
I don't know. I don't know. There's just... people, humans are insane, and we need artificial intelligence. And I don't know what it's going to take for people to stop killing each other and oppressing each other, but I don't, religion hasn't done it, government hasn't done it, the internet hasn't done it. I don't know what it's going to take. I don't think an asteroid would do it. I don't think a pandemic would do it. It's going to require humans not being human anymore, maybe. But to get more specific, I think, you know, perhaps some kind of, you know, human pact, human treaty, between governments and individuals, some kind of gesture. We're going to try and reduce the violence by not going to war, reducing our nuclear armaments, some kind of gesture like that. But, it, you know, instead it just keeps getting worse and worse. And, I don't think there's a simple answer for it.
Yeah, dude. I mean, you're right. We need some kind of like actual common sense, nonviolent platform, because for the largest empire in the world that literally is responsible for at least 1 million deaths in Iraq over the past couple decades, and who knows how many around the world. I mean, I would estimate 10 million or more. To sit there and pretend to give a shit about mass shootings at home. I'ma let them know through the stereo. Yo, here we go through the stereo.